Welcome to the Green Architects Lounge podcast. I'm your host, Chris Briley.
And I'm your host, Phil Kaplan. Hey, I'm doing great, Chris. How are you doing?
I was just going to ask you, how are you doing?
I beat you to it again.
I know, it's very cliche of us. Fine. Happy to be back.
Let's talk today about
Passive House.
Yeah. In general, and essentially that there's sort of a split in the Passive House community.
Right.
And we're here to kind of poke at it a little bit, dig a little deeper and ask some questions and try to understand the difference between Fias Plus
right.
and Passive House.
Fias, right. The new 2015 standards and Fee, the European thing. Basically, here's my take on it, and maybe this is the theme for the podcast. It's like there are parents, there are Passive House parents, and they got a divorce. Right, and we are their children, and they want us to come to their house for Christmas, and we have to decide. Which flavor of Passive House we're going to pursue. We're going to certify that. And like any good divorce, we need alcohol to go with.
That's right. It's the only way we're going to make it through Christmas.
I know. Right. Christmas with the divorced parents. Oh, my God. What we really need is a Manhattan.
That's right.
Phil, this is the best. I think, hand on heart, this is the best Manhattan I've ever had.
Well, ever. Thank you, Chris. Thanks for saying so.
It's delicious. And strong. Holy monkey.
All right.
I just sprouted a hair on my chest.
You were due.
Right, I was too. I've got three now.
That's good.
They're all around my nipple, of course.
All right, so the reason I chose a Manhattan.
Yeah.
It's just a very simple, basic, elemental drink. It's really got three ingredients, that's it.
Right.
You can't screw it up, but you can.
No, I was going to say, you can, actually. Mm-hmm. I've asked for a Manhattan, had one, and I don't know, they used, like, the wrong vermouth, and just tastes cheap, maybe the toss a few maraschino cherries in it or something, and I don't know. It's not what I wanted.
It can go wrong. One of my points with this Manhattan and talking about Manhattans today is to let them know the ingredients and the specifics of Manhattan are really essentially important. Okay, so the classic Manhattan is 2-1. You get your bourbon, you get your sweet vermouth.
Right,
okay?
Sweet vermouth. Mm-hmm. Big difference.
Right.
Don't use the same vermouth used in your martini. Splurge.
That's right. So, I mean, you can go down to the end of the street. You can go to your Shaw's or Hannaford or Giant Eagle or whatever you've got wherever you are. But don't get that vermouth.
Right.
Go to a store and look at the vermouth selection.
So the vermouth we're having
is called Punt y Mes.
Yeah.
Which means I have no idea, but I'm going to look it up. Punt y Mes. Yes.
I've got a lifeline. I've got a lifeline.
It's not Spanish, otherwise it would be a Y instead of an E. So,
oh, Portuguese,
maybe?
Italian.
All right, or we're going to look it up and fill it in afterwards. But it's a very different kind of sweet vermouth. I also make it with Carpano Antica, which is a slightly sweeter sweet vermouth.
Yeah.
I mean, these are top shelf vermouths.
Yeah.
And by top shelf, it means you're paying an extra $5 to $10 a bottle.
Holy crap!
Exactly.
Right.
And how much does a Manhattan cost when you get out?
$5 to $10 a glass.
Or more. So spend the money.
If you're a drinking boss.
Get yourself a better vermouth. There's another vermouth called Vermut, which
sounds German when you say it like that.
I don't know where it's from, again.
It's just missing the age.
It tastes really wonderful.
Nice.
Still, you stay with the 2-1 mix, you'll realize some are sweeter. And some are not.
This Manhattan, you've done those things, but then you've added something even special that's a fill.
Well, it's the Punt y Mes and the Woodford's Reserve is the bourbon that we're using tonight.
Excellent. Holy cow.
And then you use 2 to 3 dashes of bitters. I'm a bitters guy, so you use 3 bitters in mine.
Right.
However, now, this is my bitters.
Exactly. As you know from the last podcast, Phil has graduated to, drink maestro status by making his own, fashioning his own bitters. He's been doing this for maybe a couple years, 1 year.
Everybody has hobbies, Chris.
That's right. Well, everyone with time on their hands because they're not busy with architecture, I guess.
Apparently, I got nothing to do with my life.
We can't get together to do a podcast, but boy, you've got time for bitters. No, it's great. And well done, too. You're an artist.
Thank you. Well, this is my almond fig bitters.
Right. Correct? No one's going to find anything like this. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, it's a little. I mean, the standard is an Angostura bitters. The traditional, I wouldn't recommend it much else than that. Like, you can use, some people use a Peychaud's bitter, which I don't really like.
That's more of a Sazerac kind of thing.
It's not the right piece for this. There's a bitters called Boker's, which is really nice.
Mm-hmm.
I'd prefer that. Fee Brothers makes an old-fashioned style bitters, also good in Manhattans.
Here's what you do. You tape a $50 bill to an envelope, and you send it to Phil Kaplan, Kaplan Thompson Architects, Portland, Maine, 4th Street. What's your address? Something 4th Street. You'll find them. Google them, and then beg him to send you some of this.
That's okay. I'm keeping some in the office from now on. Just come knock on our door. I'll make you one.
All right.
On Friday afternoon.
And at Briburn, we'll figure out some other way to lure you back over to our side, and we'll keep on competing. I don't know. I don't know how I can compete with this.
I'll make them for you and drink them with you, my friend.
You are a gentleman.
Hey, do you want to talk about what we're doing the podcast on?
Oh, we're doing a podcast?
That's right. I almost forgot.
All right. Okay. Yeah, right. Fia's Passive House, yada, yada, yada. Right. So, by now, if you've made it to this podcast, if you've not been living under a rock, and you're an architect of some kind or builder, green building enthusiast, you've heard of Passive House. You may even know their standards. And what you may not know, or what you are probably coming to know, is that there are flavors of Passive House.
Just like there are flavors of vermouth and bitters.
Exactly. And you can have an excellent Manhattan with a certain combination, or you can have an excellent Manhattan with another combination.
Right. And one's different. Not necessarily better.
Right.
But they're different.
They're different. And you gotta know what you're getting into. So first, let's start with a real quick history of Passive House. Real quick, because we're assuming at this point you already know about Passive House. You already know the standards. We don't need to go through that completely. But it helps with a little bit of history to know that Passive House basically, everyone thinks of it as European, but all the principles really started in the United States and Illinois and even Canada a little bit during the energy crisis, 70s, whatever. We start having these uber efficient double envelope and tight envelope houses. Basically, once that energy crisis is over, well, then we rip off Jimmy Carter's solar panels. Reagan comes in, rips off Jimmy Carter's solar panels. Everyone relax. Everything's good now. But except the Europeans, they don't have the same relaxation and they keep working at it. And then you've got, who do you have? You have Dr. Feist, of course, Bo Adamson, and Robert Hastings. Those are the guys who are championing Passive House. They write some papers and they're doing some research and they're talking about this idea of having a house that is heating itself with internal gains in solar and needs very little other heat. That's, this Passive House. And of course, they eventually, in Darmstadt, Germany, build the first Passive House that everyone has seen pictures of and they know about. And then Dr. Feist, invites Amory Lovins, who, of course, American and of the Rocky Mountain Institute.
Yeah.
And basically, Amory was sort of instrumental in saying to, in fact, you can look at our old podcast where we don't have the audio for it, but we've got the transcript of where Dr. Feist is saying, he's talking to Amory, who says to him that, this is not just a scientific experiment you guys have done. This can be applied. This can be a real thing, and helps transform that into the standards that we have today, Passive House standards. And then, of course, enter Katrin Klingenberg and the Ecolab and, Mike Kernaghis and those guys, these sort of like this American, wing that sort of goes to Darmstadt, learns all this stuff, brings it back, sort of gets a little, American spirit to it or whatever. And then Katrin does her first Passive House, I think it was 2002, is that right?
Is it really that long ago? I guess so.
Oh, yeah, I think, and 96 was the first Passive House? I don't know. Someone's going to have to fact check because we're just drinking and chatting like we do. That's how that's how we roll here. But and then of course, Katrin Klingenberg, who is, you know, now very close with Dr. Feist, and they have a lot of synergy, and she founds FIAS, Passive House Institute US. Of course, Dr. Feist has already founded Passive House Institute in Europe, and that's international, and FIAS is just sort of like the American, you know, wing of it. And then, you know, we're not really going to, I think, in this podcast, Phil, dwell on what happened, what caused the divorce, because I think that's history. We mm-hmm. don't care. I mean, we could get into it, and I'd rather not.
Right. I mean, we're not taking sides here. We're really trying to do our best at objectively looking at this. And I think, Chris, you and I both have that same attitude. We're right. not. Neither one of us fall on one side or the other.
Right. We like to think of our office as being passidextrous. You know, we've got one fee project. We've got a FIAS project, you know, in certification. You know, that's all we've done. But, you know, we've been living this thing for a long time. It's amazing. You know, you think like, well, we're doing passive houses. Oh, we've done two.
It's like, are they one of each? Are you bi?
Yeah, I'm bi. I'm totally. Of course I am, Phil. You know me. God, this Manhattan is awesome. Anyway, So we want to be in this office. We have the attitude where we want to be very flexible. We're ready to do either one. Up until 2015, the standards were exactly the same. They're passive house standards. Do you want to do those standards?
We'll talk about them mm-hmm. real quick.
4.75 cubic right. use per square foot per year.
Right.
Versus.
And that's the 15. Big one for us. Yeah, that's the big one for us in the northern climate, like climate zone 6. Like, that's the one that we have to hit.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have primary energy. We need the equivalent of 11.1 kilowatts per square foot.
And then we have our air tightness,
0.6 ACH 50. Which is, you know.
And 50, yeah.
At 50 pascals. We've mm-hmm. talked about 50. That.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also a peak load that you have to hit that we never hit here in climate zone 6. You have to either hit, and this is, we'll get into this, you have to either hit the annual load or the peak load right now in the European standard. And for us, we just ignore the peak load because we never hit it. Peak load has to be 3.14 BTUs per square foot per year for heating. And for cooling, I think it's 2.54. But we don't worry about cooling up here. That's nonsense. Well, but you do down other zones.
Right. So we've got these standards that were essentially developed in Germany and sort of brought to fruition in Germany. And,
right.
And Katrin and her crew has brought them to the U.S. And right. realized it's a really different climate here.
That's right. And, several and climates. Yeah.
That's right. We're all over the place here. And suddenly some of those things are much harder to hit in some parts of the U.S. and really much easier to hit in other parts of the U.S.
Exactly.
So what are we doing here? Are we trying to save the world? Are we trying to save the Earth?
Right.
Or are we trying to just meet a standard?
I like to think, Phil, and we've talked about this before, that we're saving the planet.
That's right.
One building at a time, as much as we can. And we're half joking, but we're also we're serious, dude. Right?
Absolutely, serious. No, I mean, that's why we get up in the morning and,
right.
you know,
beat this drum.
And we drive into work.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, it excites us and we want to make a difference.
Right. And these standards, we should say, were not developed completely in a vacuum. I mean, the annual heating requirement and cooling requirement was actually derived. First, they figured out what the optimum, they came up with the 0.6 ACH 50 first. Because that was the healthiest, most energy efficient air sealing standard that they could come up with that actually protects the assembly as much as possible. And then once you figure out, that's 0.6 ACH 50, and you're shooting for 0.3 air changes per hour for the entire building,
mm-hmm.
there's only so much heat you can put into that amount of air volume that you're changing. And that amount of air volume is what gets you, or that air volume plus the highest amount of heat at whatever it is, 122 degrees Fahrenheit. No one uses Fahrenheit except for us in the States, but that's the maximum amount of heat that you could possibly put just using the filtered air, the balanced ventilation. So that's where they came up with those numbers. And to us in the United States, that seems arbitrary. I mean, when you hear how that comes about, you're like, oh, that makes sense. That was based on one climate, you know, Central Europe. That's that climate. And if you look at the United States, you go from Miami to us in Maine to Alaska, you know, heck, or even, you know, Minnesota. I suppose they rival us in some
of they do. And, you know, but what happens when you present a system to our tribe, our people who, you know, our group, get excited about this and want to save the planet?
Yeah.
You know, the harder the better. Let's go for it.
Well, all right.
And a group of people starts to push and say, we're gonna go for it. And we start looking at the numbers and we start looking at what we have to do in certain climates and we say, oh, you need 14 inches of rigid insulation underneath your slab in this region. And we're playing and playing and playing with our, you know, PHPP spreadsheets to get these numbers and kind of scratching our heads. Right. It's really good. We are saving the planet. But is this right for our climate?
Right. Yes.
No. Yes. Yes. Well, maybe. Maybe, right. Because we're still saving the world.
Right.
I don't mean that judgmentally at all.
Right.
But that's why some people started to ask the question.
Well, and I'll go on a tangent with you if you want to climb aboard. Having done a passive house before, and when you get to the point where you just need a little bit more insulation to hit your numbers, boy, the slab's the easiest place to add more insulation. It's like you have so many dials to turn, you know, in terms of increasing your glazing, increasing your glazing efficiency, your, you know, solar heat gain coefficient, your ERV efficiency, your volume, right. All that jazz is so easy to say.
But are we saving the slab or are we saving the planet, Chris? That's a lot of rigid insulation that we could put 1 inch on how many houses?
Right.
Versus 14 inches underneath one.
True. I don't think we're going to go down that route.
No, but it's...
Right, it's there.
We're saving the planet here.
Right. So, but that takes you to where we are when we have this great schism. You know, in that interview I did, I had
say schism again.
Schism.
I really like that.
Sounds dirty.
You say it.
Exactly. Schism. So, I invited Dr. Feist and Katrin Klingenberg back when they were together before the divorce.
Mm-hmm.
I invited them to a nice dinner out, and I have to say, Dr. Feist was the most pleasant, nicest guy in the world because he was on European time after coming to Boston. It's now dinner time for him. It must have been like 3 a.m. and we're going out to dinner, and I'm like, hey, can I record a thing? You know, put the little mic on the stand, on the table while we have dinner and chat some more.
That's right. That was spectacular.
About Passive House, and it's really amazing. But I was struck by the fact that, if you look through the transcript of that, they alluded to both Katrin and Dr. Feist together that they had already divided the world up into different climate zones, and they were working on standards for all the different climate zones. And this is back when they were together. And then when this divorce happens, it's Feist that is really driving the different standards for different climate zones. And now I think maybe we better talk about that.
That's great, though, Chris. I'm going to go back and listen to that podcast now. It's a little piece of history.
Well, see, I wish you could listen to it. Like, I've listened to it, but it's it just turned into transcript. It's just the best bits.
Right, because, muddy fuzz at a bar.
Oh, my God. It was like, I wanted to go to a quiet bar after the, you know, a quiet little restaurant. There's no such thing on Newbury Street, in downtown Boston. My God. And we ordered the loudest fajita I've ever heard on the world. You know, it's excruciating for me to, you know, just go through that thing to listen to. I can't subject listeners to that. But it was really great.
We have the transcript. And
they were together. And they were smiling. And they were really, you know. So I kind of have this perspective of things just didn't work out. You know, it's like that. Honestly, it's like the divorce. It's like, I'm a kid. I love them both. I think they've both done fantastic work, and they're both dedicated to it and really serious about moving things along. They just had this bump in the road that they can't get past, whatever that was. And we have, we don't need to dig it up, that, you know, what caused the separation. But where we are now is
Well, let's get into it. With Fee, Pacifist Institute, that's European, to work on that project, to decide I'm going to do a Fee project, you've made the decision I'm going to work with the PHPP, the Pacifist Planning Package, as your energy model. Mm-hmm. That's number one. And there's some new versions of the PHPP that has a SketchUp plugin. I've not seen this or worked with it. And I think that is in reaction to what FIUS, the American version, is doing, where they have been using Woofy. They've decided, okay, PHPP is awesome. It's rigorous. You've done that, right? Or you've worked with that in your office. It is.
That's right. Absolutely.
The PHPP, for those of you who don't know it by now, is a spreadsheet. That's all it is. But it's open source.
It's just
source.
A 26-tab spreadsheet. Oh, that's it. That's all.
And those aren't mamby-pamby tabs either. Just start inputting Windows. Oh, my God. I mean, it can go. But it's also open source. So if you have these issues where you have these anomalous little pieces of your building that are quirky, you know, like this is not inside the envelope, but we're insulating it anyway. It's a buffered space. You know, you can add a tab and figure out some things, and some clever guys can tweak it and go, there you go, kid. That's a more accurate thing. It's actually one of the more accurate energy models you could possibly have, but it's enormously rigorous. It's the type of thing that you and I, when we sit down, we go, God, I don't want to do that all day. It's cells and a spreadsheet.
But they're both still using the spreadsheet. So Woofy passive, which is
right. So FIUS
is using,
right. They said, okay, we're also accepting Woofy passive. They've had this partnership with Fraunhofer, who is they're a testing company that sounds German. I want to say they're German. I don't know that they're German, but I'm assuming they're German because Fraunhofer.
I'll go with that. Yeah.
Fraunhofer, sure.
It doesn't sound Italian.
Or American or Spanish. Anyway, so they've teamed up with Woofy. To develop a Woofy Passive, which is an energy modeling software, which you and I are a lot more keen to work with, because basically you just import your SketchUp model. Everything's geometric, you know, and then you just go through the little folder tree, you fill in the data, and it tells you where you're wrong. It tells you, like, oh, I can't, you know, this is missing. This cell is missing. These things are missing. This is probably too high. This is probably too low. Check it. And then you're done, and boop, gives you your X, you know, your data. So I'd say to the graphic person, it's much more user-friendly than to the spreadsheet-type person. But we know these spreadsheet-type people, and they might gravitate towards that. So in a way, there's like how you energy model your house from the get-go right there. That's different.
Mm-hmm.
You're using Woofy Passive. Actually, I don't know this, but I think, you know, Woofy or FIUS was happy to accept PHPP or Woofy Passive, whereas Fee is like, well, you use the PHPP, that is how it's done. There's one way to do this. It's right. Very German.
So what else is different, Chris, in the base?
Oh, mamacita, buckle up. The biggest, the biggest thing is, like we talked about before, is the climate-specific standard. So your annual heating and cooling from the FIUS standpoint, it's not this single number. It's not a 4.75 BTUs per square foot per year. It is click on this website and click on your local weather place, your climate data set that's closest to you, and then you have your new benchmark that you're trying to hit. And there's a lot of snobbery out there for the European version, where, because it's tougher, right? It was first, why are you deviating from it? It was this thing, you need help hitting these standards for your climate? Here's an easier set of standards, you pansy. But I tell you, that's not exactly right, because both my passive houses that I've done, if I did the FIUS version, they would fail. But on the European, they pass. Mm-hmm. Here's where they failed. Mm-hmm. The Viridescent house, which maybe I'll put a picture of in this. Yeah, I'll do that. The Viridescent house, which is going for FIUS certification right now, all on the old standard, not on the new standard. So we're hitting all the same European standards for both these houses. But for the 2015 standard, the peak load, the threshold is higher, but we actually have to hit it before we could choose whether or not we want to hit peak load or annual load. And the peak load, you always miss. You always miss it. There's no way we, at a peak load, can get down to that low number. You're not going to hit it. And so the number's higher, so you think, oh, it must be easier to hit. But yeah, but you have to hit them both. You have to hit annual and peak, and we just missed the peak on the Viridescent House for the 2015 stand, which means we would go back and we'd tweak something to make it, and we'd do it. So that's one thing. You have to hit both of those. So, and for the other house, it's a much larger house, and we would have probably just missed the air ceiling.
But you have to get much tighter.
You have to get tighter on the larger house.
Because it's tested for CFM per square foot of shell.
Correct.
Versus ACH 50 now.
Right. Now, and this is a big, if you talk to the FIAS people, this is a big adjustment. This is a big correction, because there is sort of this bias to the larger building if you're basing it on volume, because your larger building has a much more...
The ratio of skin to volume.
Exactly.
So PHI, the big buildings are much easier to hit.
Exactly. So like the Viridescent House, you know, it's tiny, and my God, that was the most aggressive air sealing thing we've ever done, mm-hmm. I've ever been involved in. And we're still sweating it at the end when these numbers are coming in. I'm watching, you know, the blower door dance, the CFM numbers dance, and I have, you know, heart flutters.
We had the same thing with Bright Built Barn. We were just starting to pass us, and we had the goal of 0.6 in mind.
Yeah.
And that thing was tight, tight.
Because it's so
tight,
damn small.
Freaking tight.
Yeah.
But we just barely got there by the skin of our teeth.
And see, like that standard with the FIAS, you'd probably coast through it. Coast through it. I mean, let's not sugarcoat it. Both these standards are very respectable. I mean, you're still doing a very energy efficient, super tight house. Here's the other trick to that for FIAS is, okay, you've heard of the TFA, right? Treated floor area.
Right. It's like a net versus gross now, right?
Exactly.
They measure it differently, so... Right. So, how do you get apples to apples?
Right. Well, so that.
You know, why do you need to get apples to apples? Where we're going to end up? Okay.
All right. So then the question is, why did FIAS go and rock the boat and change TFA? Because TFA was, and maybe I've had a couple of drinks and I'm doing this from memory, but I'm pretty sure TFA is basically your floor area times 8.2. feet. So like your volume could be much more voluminous, but you're capping it. You're just saying that's what you're really ventilating. And then you have all these other rules for mechanical spaces and spaces under stairs and things like that. Well, the ICFA is basically, they say it's like the golf ball. You fill your building with golf balls, and so you subtract the interior partitions like you do with the CFA.
Right, you fill it with fluid and then you dump it out.
That's what it is. And you gotta get the little window niches. I feel like I've been talking for a while. Maybe.
You'd also know this better than I do, so.
No, that's not true. I mean, you guys are doing passive houses out the wazoo as well.
Yeah, we are. We were just up against this in a big project trying to look at both of the systems, really trying to hit some passive house standard. And the truth is that one is not easier than the other.
Right.
They're just
different.
Absolutely different.
So you have to know what you're going into for mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, that's right. You have to, you know, the truth is that FIAS Plus should be called something else. We should think of it as a really wonderful, you know, American low energy goal.
And to that point, a lot of these new, these climate-specific data points were all not developed in a vacuum. They were all based on, you know, different metrics to generate safe, economical, comfortable structures, and that was interpolated across these different things.
And as I understand it, is that FIAS attempts to monitor the amount of energy per person.
Correct.
Versus PHI, which talks about the energy per square foot.
And the way they do that per person is they do it by bedroom, so which is very much like ResNet. And so they knew what they were doing. They were partnering with other organizations to develop these standards so that they're sort of consistent in the United States. So basically you take the bedrooms, number of bedrooms, plus one times 6,200 kilowatt hours times 3.412, which is the loss.
Holy
buckle up.
Alert,
I know, hang on. So that's the energy loss, that's the line loss to get that 6,200 kilowatt hours to your house, you have to multiply it times 3.412 to get the actual amount of power you did. And then you divide that by the ICFA, which is different than TFA. So you see how complicated it gets, a little fuzzy, but it's really not that big a deal. And then
and the source energy piece is different, right?
Well, that is, yeah, that's the different part.
That's the whole piece, and it's because we have dirty power here in the U.S.
Right, yeah, power is different in different places.
But then again, in the U.S., are we using hydro or coal? You know, what?
Right, exactly, and it does not get that nuanced, thank God, because, right?
Here's one of my concerns, and it's really strictly from marketing. I mean, Passive House has been on a roll. And there had been a unified tribe who said, this is a great thing, we're going to change the world. This has been the most stringent energy goal that we have out there. You know, there's Living Building Challenge, but Passive House has had a full head of steam. And Fias Plus has really made it more accessible in a lot of ways to the U.S. market. At the same time, there's a marketing problem.
Yeah.
Because we had three metrics that we all started to get into our heads.
Right.
And now it's... well, it could be anything.
Right.
You know, it's the same issue you have sometimes when somebody's asking you, Chris, how much are you going to charge for design a house?
Oh, God, Phil, I don't know. There's so many variables involved. How big's your house?
Blah, blah, blah. I'm not listening anymore.
Right.
Tell me 60 grand.
60 grand?
That's too much. Tell me 40 grand.
40 grand.
I'll take
that's
it.
Good.
Thank you.
Let's sign
just,
you up.
Just I, get
gonna,
a number down.
I'm going to work up a proposal and have it on your desk in the morning.
And the right amount of people are just going to say yes right away. They get it and they want to move on.
I like those people.
But if you start trying to talk about it in detail and too many units, I think you have a marketing problem.
Interesting. So do you think Fias has a marketing problem? Out of curiosity?
Well, I'm concerned.
Yeah.
I'm concerned. I think in some ways... it's smart because more people can attain Fias Plus, but I think it's going to be over certain people's heads.
Yeah. Oh, well, so here...
there's again, we're not making judgments here, but I
right.
think...
no, I agree.
That's what comes to mind.
I agree with that. But here's their power play. Woofy Passive, which I mentioned, free. It's now free. You can go get Woofy Passive for free. Your own energy modeling software that's pretty sophisticated and pretty nice. It only does thermal stuff. Woofy's famous.
But how much does it cost to learn it?
A shitload of time.
That's right.
Load of time.
That's okay. Time is free.
I got bleeped twice. But, you know, and it's one thing for you and I to learn it. You know, I just got off. I should say this, too. I just came off of getting my CHPC, Certified Passive House Consultant Training.
Hey, cheers.
Hey, thanks, dude. Through Fias, so that's the route I went.
Right.
Just because it was most convenient. Again, I really wouldn't have cared. No, that's not true, because I was pretty enchanted with Woofy Passive, as I could see myself sitting at my desk doing Woofy Passive, whereas I could see myself sitting at my desk doing PHPP and being less happy.
Hmm.
But that's just because I know myself.
Mm-hmm.
Woofy Passive, Woofy being famous for doing hygrothermic analysis of assemblies, where you can tell where your dew point is, and you know how much, you know, is this assembly wet at this point or not. That is its call to fame. But Woofy Passive doesn't do the moisture part, just says thermal, the free part. But you can get Woofy Plus and then do everything else, but that's going to cost you. So that's how they get you.
That's how they get you.
They get you all
excited. They're going to get you one way or another.
Yeah, and you get all geeked out, and you're like, this is awesome. Right. What else do we want to talk about? So primary energy is calculated differently.
Mm-hmm.
So that's different. And then your infiltration, your 0.6 ACH50. Now we're not 0.6 ACH50. We're concerned with 0.05 CFM per gross square foot of shell area. And it's very easy to convert your ACH50 number that you're used to calculating and convert it to your shell, but you need to know your shell envelope, and you need to know, you know, everything you needed to know to get your ACH50, your volume and such. So
it's different.
It's different. It's just different. Everyone just relax. It's just different. You can go to mom's house for Christmas or dad's house for Christmas. You're going to have a good time. Everything's going to be great and fine, and they're going to be happy for you for your choice and hope that you'll come to theirs next
That's right. Christmas. They're going to both make very different meals, but either way, you're going to come out fed.
I like schnitzel. Yeah, no, I see. I don't know. That's a very German thing to say. I don't know. That's probably racist. I'm being racist again.
I think so.
I don't know. I actually do very much like schnitzel. It's very good.
I like burgers and fries.
Well, who doesn't? Who doesn't?
That's the U.S. version.
You're American. All right. So last thing, I think we're ready to wrap this up.
Yeah, I think so.
Because I think more than just you and me blabbing on about it, there's plenty of links that we're going to provide you. Katrin just posted her own little blog to Green Building Advisor, and we're going to invite Dr. Feist to also chime in.
Are we going
to read her letter? Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Because the other thing I did prior to this, I like to give these important people a couple days notice before we go online. We did the three questions. We sent an email out to each one of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they replied back, or Katrin replied back,
right?
And
Dr. Feist, not yet. Hopefully, we'll hear from him, and maybe we'll hear someone and we'll chime in.
Yeah, and that'd be great. But he had someone over there, Benjamin, chimed back, and he sent me a couple of links to some really great things new things that are happening with the Passive House Institute, and they basically revolve around the fact that Passive House. We've talked a lot about FIAS and the change. Probably rightfully so, but FI is also evolving. You know, they're getting a SketchUp plugin for PHPP to help people like you and me.
Mm-hmm.
They've also developed they've got the Passive House Classic, and they've got Passive House Plus and Passive House Premium, which has to do with being net zero or being net positive. Or are you integrating PV into your building? You could be. If you're Passive House, then you're Passive House Plus. And are you net zero? Then your Passive House Premium.
So I'm a little confused. Is this like the new Coke?
It's like the new Coke.
Okay.
It tastes better. It tastes better. Just try it. Just give it a chance. No. It's really the exact same thing, only they're recognizing renewables is really what they're doing.
Oh, okay.
So, interesting. Because before, Passive House was...
Right, it didn't matter.
It was all about energy demand. Its beauty was its absolute simplicity. You know, it's just like energy demand. You may hit this standard and be a Passive House, or you may not. It is up to you. That's it. And in a way, that's gorgeous. You know,
yeah, appreciate the elegance. And again, marketing, nice job.
Nice job. Done. And now they're saying, and if you add renewables, good for you. We'll put a plus on it. So, I don't know. They're throwing the Americans a bone there, the Germans.
It's Americans, we like those little extra stars.
You need pluses?
Can I get a blue sticker? Can I get a little extra blue star, please?
Yeah, yes, you can. Yeah, we love golds and silvers and platinums.
Gold is the best.
I don't know, platinum. I made up a platinum and it's better. Oof. Anyway, all right, so let's
look sparkly and silver to me.
Yeah. So we emailed Katrin and Dr. Feist. Katrin got back to us. Dr. Feist did not get back in time. So I'll tell you what we'll do. Let's read. Let's take a break. Refresh the drinks. Come back. Read Katrin's answers and plow on. Sound good?
Sounds great, Chris. Welcome back.
Yeah, you look different. No.
I get a haircut.
Well, yeah?
Going.
That looks good.
Thanks.
Yeah, handsome man.
Yeah. So you're going to tell us what Katrin Klingenberg has to say.
Right.
Based on the three questions that we asked.
Right.
And answer them.
And I don't want to, I feel like this has been FIAS heavy in our conversations, but I think it's, FIAS is the one who's like changing. They're like the one doing the new standard right now, so maybe it's fine that we're doing that, but this went out to both Katrin and Dr. Feist, and like I said before, Dr. Feist is a fantastic dude, very kind dude, and I'm sure he'd reply, but I didn't give him a lot of notice, and he's a busy guy, and so, but Katrin did, which was nice of her. So here are our questions. I asked both of them, and so only Katrin got back to me in time for this airing. So we're going to talk about. This was a great conversation. So real quick, I asked, do you believe the division of FI and FIAS is a good thing or a bad thing for the building industry and why?
She responded, "Is a good thing. There are options and different takes on the passive house approach and related standards in the marketplace. Diversity in viewpoints and open scientific discourse facilitates the evolution of concepts and leads to better results." Very well said,
actually. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the counterpoint to that, I'll just throw in, was that it, when the division happened, I was mid-project when it happened, and it was tough, man. Because I was like, oh, who's going to certify this thing? Everyone I was talking to was FIA certified, you know? So then we switched wagons. We didn't know what to do. So
yeah, it's a tricky position that we've been put in, people who are
in the process. The kids in the divorce. We have to figure out we have to navigate our own path between this whole thing. So not that we don't love them, because we do, but it's going to be fascinating to see how this all plays out on the American side. And by the way, screw the metric system. I don't know why we're not in the metric system. Don't you remember being in like grade school? When you were a kid in grade school.
Yeah, we started to learn it.
Yeah, it was like, kids, you're going to have to learn this because we're switching to the metric system pretty soon in your lifetime, in your generation.
And what happened? Was it the same time the solar panels got ripped off the White House that Reagan said,
Reagan,
I'm too old to learn this crap. Forget it. Never mind.
I am too old to learn this crap.
That was frighteningly good.
Oh, thank you. Well, I can imitate anybody with
a couple of drinks.
Yeah, Sean Connery.
Let's hear it.
Lovely party. Pity I wasn't invited. You boys and your green architecture. All right.
Outstanding.
Thank you.
How about number two?
No, what do you mean number two? I can't imitate number two. You mean number two from the Mike Myers movie? The International Man. Austin Powers, International Man. Number two? Lost it. Oh, there it is. I said, there are a lot of architects and builders who are just beginning their understanding of passive house concepts and are just learning that there is a European original certification system set of standards, and that there is also an American new certification system and set of standards. There's a lot that I'm sure you'd want them to know, but what do you think is the single most important thing that they should know about this difference? Phil, I'll let you read her response.
Thanks. Should I do it in her voice?
No. I think she'd be offended.
Okay,
no. Let's
not do that.
German accent.
I don't know. I'm just trying to
go with it.
You started with your Sean Connery, and I'm not sure what else I have to... So Catherine said, first, I think it's really important to accurately relay the history to newcomers. A wise friend of mine once said, if you don't know your history, you have no future.
Very wise.
The original Passive House research and concept was developed in Canada and the U.S. in the 70s and 80s. Passive House Standard, the guiding energy metric, was established in Europe based on those North American building science principles in the mid-90s. It would behoove the discussion,
behoove.
Good word.
Great word.
It would behoove the discussion and the community to clearly distinguish the two, the set of principles about which there is complete agreement versus metrics.
Right.
This to fairly attribute the contributions of the early North American pioneers and to those who did important work in Europe, including the idea of a pass-fail performance threshold.
Right. Great. You can see why Catherine's like where she is. I mean, she's very deliberate about what she's doing. It's not... Mm-hmm. Out of thin air. And I like what she says there about making sure that, you know, we all understand that, you know, we're all after the same goals. You know, the principles are exactly the same. Mm-hmm. Metrics are different, you know.
Right.
So, very good. Number three, what is the latest development in your respective organizations that you would want architects and builders to know about? And I cite examples, development software for energy models, new standards, new methods for certification, new methods of training. Do you want to hear her voice again?
Sure, that was good last time.
Yeah.
We made the transition to Woofy Passive, a dynamic passive modeling software program for more accurate modeling results in varying climates. Regarding our certification, our FIAS Plus 2015 certified projects are also qualified by our partnership with the U.S. DOE as Zero Energy Ready. I had heard that.
Mm-hmm.
The most important and most recent development is the FIAS Plus 2015 Passive Building Standard. It's the product of 3 years of work under a Department of Energy study in which the applicability of the European standard to North American climate zones was investigated and adjustments were proposed as a result of the research. It was officially launched in March 2015. FIAS Plus 2015 makes important adjustments to the metrics while maintaining the same principles as its base assumptions, Most importantly, design-guiding energy metrics are now climate-specific and cost-optimized using North American construction and energy cost data, which will remedy costly overinvestment in the envelope and overheating issues that had occurred under the European standard. As part of that effort to take the next logical step in getting off carbon, we launched a Source Net Zero Energy Certification with FIAS Plus 2015 as an envelope baseline, essentially certifying a building as producing sufficiently positive energy amounts to offset all carbon emitted operating the building during a year.
Right. Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. So FIAS.
It's concise, and that was a lot of the stuff that you and I had introduced.
Yeah, indeed.
We talked about this.
Yeah, I feel pretty good that we kind of covered that too. So, yeah, and FIAS, like FEE, you know, is, they have their FIAS Plus, you know, so the, you know, they recognize if you're a net zero building, and they are teamed up with the Department of Energy and, you know, the net zero ready standards. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, great. Done. Feel good.
I feel good. And hopefully we'll this will spur a little more talk, as it has continued to do over the last couple months.
Yeah, I'm sure we did not cover everything, but we're going to provide some links on the side. The new Woofy, or the new FIAS 2015 standards, I think, are going to be, they're going to go through the ringer, and, you know, we'll see how it comes out the other side. I know that cooling, for example, is a bigger, the mid-European climate, you know, there's really not a cooling component to it. And when you start applying that to Miami, you know, all of a sudden cooling standards are really hard to meet on the new FIAS standards, whereas they're almost non-existent on the FEE. But
yeah, that's interesting. And
yeah,
Ketrin's pretty clear about that on her GBA article.
Right, yeah. I urge you all to go actually hear this from the horse's mouth. Phil and I are just kind of alerting you to the fact that there are two different systems. Just relax. No big deal.
They're different things. You just have to think of them as different certification
different
systems.
Things.
We've got a bunch of them now, and they're all good because they all drive us as an industry in the right direction.
Right.
So...
yeah, you love them. Yeah. They're your parents. You like them.
No fisticuffs.
No fisticuffs. No
back to back to hugs. Chris, can
back
we all
to hugs? Have a what cocktail and just get on with it, dude.
Cheers.
Cheers, buddy.
So I'm gonna take us out with a song.
Yes. Who do you have this time?
The Mountain Goats. I know you don't love the Mountain Goats.
I did. It's the lead singer's voice.
Yeah.
You know, he's just, you know, he's kind of, he feels like my goober brother. He's just, you know, he's like.
I love it. He sings like I imagine he talks.
Exactly. I kind of wish he was singing more.
Very real to me.
All right.
Well, his new album called Beat the Champ.
Yeah. Now that song.
And I say his, but it's a band.
It is a band.
Jaron Darnielle is the lead singer and the writer.
All right, but you sent me that song. I was at least four or five measures into it and liking it, and then.
He started singing.
He started. I'm like, oh, this is the Mountain Goats. This is their new one. Oh. Well, all right, this one I like, fine.
And then he got to the line, I'm personally going to stick you in the eye with a foreign object.
And I'm like, I am sold, fine. Mm-hmm. I see you, Phil. I got you.
So the album is called Beat the Champ.
Nice.
It is all about professional wrestling, top to bottom.
Oh really? The whole album?
Love it.
Oh, yeah. So that explains the foreign object.
The song is called Foreign Object.
It's not about the building collaborative team, architects, builders, engineers. Stab you in the eye with a foreign object.
Pro wrestling, dude. It's nice. A throwdown.
Great.
Another good one, Chris. Great. Cheers.
Cheers. I'll see you next time we do this, Phil, or if not before. Yeah. Later.
Bye.
Like a dog, down on the cards, square in the spotlight, sweating real hard. All soaked in blood, like a newborn babe, sharp thing hidden in my hand, shaped like an astrolabe. Gonna stick you in the eye with a foreign object. Gonna poke you in the eye with a foreign object. Poses, keep my weapon handy.